Hey everybody, Scott Horton here, inviting you to check out the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org. They've got a brand new website with new and improved access to more than 20 years worth of essays promoting the cause of liberty. And FFF's writers, including Jacob Hornberger, Jim Bovard, Sheldon Richman, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and more, aren't just good. They're the best at opposing and discrediting our corrupt overlords in Washington and their warfare, welfare, regulatory police state. That's the Future Freedom Foundation's new and improved site at fff.org. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. Our next guest is a reporter for McClatchy Newspapers based in Mexico City. His name is Tim Johnson. Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Very fine, Scott. Thank you.
Good. Thank you for joining us today. Really appreciate it. And three articles here I want to focus on about the drug war down in Mexico. First of all, 27,000 missing, according to Human Rights Watch, in a new report that they put out. Disappeared peoples. Is that right? 27,000?
Yes, that's actually a figure that that Human Rights Watch didn't give that figure out. It was a figure from the Interior Ministry of Mexico.
Oh, pardon
me.
So
it's the first time that the government of Mexico has actually acknowledged that they have indications that that many people have gone have either gone missing or been reported as disappeared.
Wow. And then that's on top, you say, of 70,000 estimated dead in the drug war just since 2006. Is that correct?
That is correct. So we're talking, you know, basically that there may be as many as 100,000 victims of this really brutal drug war, drug cartels fighting themselves, killing civilians and the armed forces and military and police fighting the cartels. It's been tremendous. It's going to go down in the annals of Latin American history as one of the very brutal periods in any country.
Well, in your journalism here at McClatchyDC.com, you actually go through and compare this to the very political civil wars and dirty wars of Latin America, especially during the Cold War years, right? And this beats out most of them, or all.
Well, certainly ranks right up there with some of the almost forgotten chapters. For instance, La Violencia, the period in Colombia that was a precursor to the extended guerrilla war there, hundreds of millions of people dead. 200,000 people died in the Guatemalan Civil War from 1960 till 1996. Mm-hmm. Then we got the various civil wars in Nicaragua and El Salvador. They left anywhere from 60 to 75,000 dead each. This has been just a terribly a bloody period for Mexico.
Yeah, and it's not a civil war over who's going to control the capital city, the left or the right, and how brutally are they going to butcher their enemies when they win, that kind of thing. It's just a fight over a black market by criminal cartels.
Yeah, but we're talking about billions and billions of dollars of profit, and so, yeah, it's a war of greed more than a war of power and ideology.
It's amazing. I mean, you talked about, would you say 250,000 in Guatemala's civil war?
200,000 is a good estimate, yeah. Uh-huh.
So we're at almost half of that in, what, a fifth of the time or a quarter of the time, something?
That's true. Of course, Mexico is a much larger country, but, it's we're talking about a six-year period. That's the length of the Mexican presidential term.
Yeah. I mean, Guatemala is sort of the benchmark for the worst of those horrible civil wars between the left and the right and the Cold War down in Latin America, right?
Yeah, it is. And that, of course, the U.S. played a role in triggering that by sponsoring the deposal, the ouster of a leftist elected president.
Mm-hmm. All right, now, so take us back to the Vicente Fox years a little bit, if you could. I mean, what really changed when Calderon came to power?
Well, for listeners, the Institutional Revolutionary Party of Mexico was the entity that governed this country for 71 years. It was an authoritarian rule of one-party state, and they weren't ousted until the year 2000. And there was an awful lot of hope that this former Coca-Cola executive, Vicente Fox, who was the leader of a center-right party, the National Action Party, was going to really sweep away some of the hallmarks of the previous, the decades-long rule of the PRI, as the former party was known, wipe away the corrupt governors and really, just change and bring Mexico into a more democratic age. Unfortunately, it didn't happen. Fox came in, and he, rather than really sweeping away some of these elements, he had to sort of he ended up sort of co-opted by them, having to use them to be able to govern to any degree. He didn't have control of Congress, and so he sort of had to cut deals with the PRI legislators, and just didn't really move against the corrupt union leaders and so forth and monopolists that have stymied Mexico's growth. And yet, at the end of his six-year term, his successor from the same party, the PAN party, was able to just barely eke out a victory. And so the PAN, this National Action Party, has ruled for 12 years. But, as Mexicans look back, they're pretty disgusted by the fact that there wasn't much change from the PRI in those 12 years. And, in fact, the PRI's come back to power now.
Mm-hmm. Well, but now the... So Calderon, he was from Vicente Fox's party, yeah.
That's correct, this National Action Party.
Uh-huh. But then, so what caused the escalation of the drug wars so much under his term compared to under Fox's term?
Well, Fox, it's really been a long evolution of Mexican drug groups gaining more and more power from the Colombians, but during... Fox's term in the early 2000s, the Colombian president Uribe was really, really, doing a battle against the Colombian groups. And as that happened, the Mexican drug gangs got more and more power. So by the time Calderon came into office, there were six to seven, for lack of a better term, cartels, really criminal syndicates that had control of regions of Mexico and major smuggling routes. So at least three of the cartels were right on either the Texas border or the California border, controlling routes, up through Brownsville and McAllen or across to El Paso from Ciudad Juarez or from Tijuana into San Diego and California. During Calderon's term, these gangs were just, fighting each other and making buckets of money, and they just had to be. I mean, Calderon really had no choice but to really use force to try to get these gangs under control. But in hindsight, the strategy he used wasn't well thought out, and it really made the violence worse.
Well, can you explain the cause and effect there?
Well, he sent 50,000 troops into cities, mainly along the northern border. And these soldiers, would patrol the streets, but they also engage. I mean, they didn't know how to arrest people, really. They didn't know how to, cordon off a crime scene, help prosecutors get evidence. So the evidence, the signs are that the soldiers began to get corrupted by the whole process as well, and even participated in crimes, didn't really stop municipal and state police from allying with the criminal cartels and helping them carry out kidnappings and just horrendous, extortions. And so the state, the really elements of the state got bought off by the criminal gangs and, helped them commit atrocities. They got into the whole movement of Central American migrants, extorting them for more and more money and at times massacring dozens and scores, even 72 migrants in one terrible massacre. Calderon just didn't think that it was how critical it was to actually develop rule of law as a way to punish gangsters and set examples. Instead, there's just got to be a vortex of more and more violence.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they say the Zetas gang actually was just a bunch of soldiers who broke off and made their own cartel, right?
Well, certainly the founders were elite members of paratroop commandos, basically, who got recruited by the Zetas up there. The Zetas was the armed enforcers wing of the old Gulf cartel, which still exists. But the Zetas, took brutality to a new level, and they also, didn't want to stay in that corner of Mexico. They branched throughout, 20 of Mexico's 32 states in the federal district, and then they got into Central America, and then they just, really, and they used, brutality to just a new degree through beheadings and mass killings, and just going in and slaughtering enemies.
Mm-hmm. All right, and now, in one of your stories here, you talk about this new paramilitary force. Now, does that mean that they're going to pull the regular army back? But now, what's this new paramilitary force, and how are they supposed to work any better than the army?
Well, let me try to explain. By paramilitary, this is a government-sponsored militia, or they call it a gendarmerie, taking the French word. It would be kind of, for lack of a better description, they're like Texas Rangers. They're trying to create this force that's going to be specialized in rapid response, going to where there's a lot of criminality in cleaning things up, but better trained to do things like gather evidence and work with prosecutors to capture and convict gangsters. They're going to come from the ranks, as far as we're told, from the ranks of the army. There's an awful lot of skepticism about what's really new. I mean, isn't it just dressing up a pig, as it were? And we don't know the answers. Reporters don't know the answers to that yet. How exactly this force will be created, who its members will be, what kind of training they'll get, what will be the benchmarks for determining if they're successful or not. I don't know the answers to those questions.
Now, to what degree? Because we hear talk like this from, I think Fox said this once or twice, and we hear it occasionally from Mexican politicians, that we really just need to legalize the drugs, and then we can just handle the drug trade, in an open market and court system type situation, rather than dealing with a black market type war. So I wonder whether or to what degree you think American political pressure on Mexico accounts for their obviously backwards policy.
Well, the U.S. certainly has a heavy responsibility in all this, not only for an insatiable demand for cocaine, for meth, for Mexican marijuana and so forth, but also the smuggling of, tens of thousands of assault weapons into Mexico, a lot, sort of not policing that well. So both money and guns flow freely into Mexico. The Mexican presidents haven't had the guts to actually push for any sort of legalization effort while they're in office. They only do it once they leave office. But there's a new dynamic in Latin America, and you see some presidents of other countries actually taking a more proactive position on this, particularly the presidents of Guatemala, Colombia, Uruguay, and Costa Rica. And the Mexicans are watching with paying very close attention to this move, because they're seeing what's happening in state of Washington, state of Colorado with marijuana legalization, and they're not happy about the fact that they're tasked with going out and rounding up marijuana growers and even killing, getting into firefights with them when it's legal in some U.S. states. So it's really a moment of flux in what's going to happen with the legalization drive. The Mexican government, per se, hasn't really taken a strong position on it. They'll just say they'll continue to enforce law.
Mm-hmm. All right. Listen, thanks so much for your time, Tim. We got to go, but I really appreciate it.
You're welcome, Scott.
Everybody, nice, that's Tim Johnson. He's a reporter for McClatchy newspaper stationed down there in Mexico City.
Man, you need some Liberty stickers for the back of your truck. At LibertyStickers.com, they've got great state hate, like Pearl Harbor was an inside job. The Democrats want your guns. U.S. Army, die for Israel. Police brutality, not just for black people anymore. And government school, why you and your kids are so stupid. Check out these and 1,000 other great ones at LibertyStickers.com. And of course, they'll take care of all your custom printing for your band or your business at TheBumperSticker.com. That's LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. The Emergency Committee for Israel. Brookings. Heritage. AIPAC. WINEP. JINSA. PNAC. CNAS. The AEI, FPI, CFR, and CSP. It sure does seem sometimes like the war party's got the foreign policy debate in D.C. all locked up. But not quite. Check out the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. They put America first, opposing our government's world empire, and especially their Middle Eastern madness. That's the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. Hey ladies, Scott Horton here. If you would like truly youthful, healthy, and healthy-looking skin, there is one very special company you need to visit. Dagny & Lane. At DagnyandLane.com. Dagny & Lane has revolutionized the industry with a full line of products made from organic and all-natural ingredients that penetrate deeply with nutrient-rich ionic minerals and antioxidants for healthy and beautiful skin. That's Dagny & Lane at DagnyandLane.com. And for a limited time, add promo code SCOTT15 at checkout for a 15% discount. Hey y'all, Scott Horton here, inviting you to check out WallStreetWindow.com. It's a financial blog written by former hedge fund manager Mike Swanson, who's investing in commodities, mining stocks, and European markets. Wall Street Window is unique in that Mike shows people what he's really investing in and updates you when he buys or sells in his main account. Mike thinks his positions are going to go up because of all the money the Federal Reserve is printing to finance the deficit. See what happens at WallStreetWindow.com. And Mike's got a great new book coming out, so also keep your eye on writermichaelswanson.com for more details. Hey everybody, Scott Horton here. Ever think maybe your group should hire me to give a speech? Well, maybe you should. I've got a few good ones to choose from, including how to end the war on terror, the case against war with Iran, central banking in war, Uncle Sam and the Arab Spring, the ongoing war on civil liberties, and of course, why everything in the world is Woodrow Wilson's fault. But I'm happy to talk about just about anything else you've ever heard me cover on the show as well. So check out youtube.com/Scott Horton Show for some examples, and email Scott at ScottHorton.org for more details. See you there.